One of the questions, if you will, that philosophy often addresses is the question of existence and essence, or essence and existence. It really is a question that the Buddha addresses in his teachings very prominently and importantly. Now, there is a school of belief, particularly evident in the philosophical beliefs that came out of the Romantic era of the 1800s, is what Tom Jeff has been writing and talking a lot about lately. And it's a notion that, as he says, has kind of gotten brought into a lot of contemporary, particularly Western Buddhism, that essence precedes existence. That we're born with an essence, some kind of an essential character, and that in our lives we manifest this essence that we're born with. It's obviously a question that the existentialists talk about a lot. Sartre said, defined essence as an intelligible and unchanging unity of properties. So we could think of it as a character or a self, that we're born with a particular self or a soul, personality. So there's this notion that we're born with a particular character, or that we're born with a particular goodness, and that what we do in life is just express this. It's kind of like, you know, fruits and vegetables. You know, it's like potatoes comes into existence as a potato, you know, and really all it does in its life is express its potato-ness. You know? It just is a potato. This is, of course, something that the Buddha really was interested in understanding, you know, and a lot of course, the ideas and philosophies and spiritual traditions of his time kind of believed that. And the Buddha, as we always like to say, was most interested in how to make the most of this human life and this human experience, given what we have as human beings. Which meant that he really made an effort to understand what it was to be human, to understand the human experience. So what he taught was what he understood by looking and paying attention to his own experience. And what he saw and came to know, it's not a belief that he came to know, was that existence precedes essence. That we're born into this world, we have a presence in this world, but not an essential essence, that we create our essence through what we do. That our essence as human beings in this life is the result of our actions. And really this is, of course, the greatest form of freedom. This is what it means to, you know, this is what existential freedom is. Mm-hmm. Is that in this life we are free to create our lives through our actions. So it's really up to us to make our lives that which we want them to be. And we do that through our actions. So we chant that, right? We are the owner of our actions. When we talk about karma, karma is your actions that are informed by your intentions. So we're the owner of our karma, our actions. You know, our actions, we're the owners of them. Our actions. They're not predetermined by some kind of an essence. We're the owner of our actions. We're born of our actions. What we are is the result of our actions. We're heir to our actions. You know, the actions that we take are going to have consequences. We'll be heir to those consequences. We're related to other beings through our actions, and our lives are dependent on our actions, whether or not we know suffering, we experience suffering in life, we create suffering or create happiness. It's really dependent on our actions. What the Buddha knew and what we're asked to understand is that what we have as human beings in terms of our human potential we have the potential as human beings to create great suffering and great pain and great destruction. We see that, just turn on the news when you go home, you know. As human beings, you know, we can create this. We can create incredible suffering in ourselves and in the world. As human beings, we have an extraordinary potential for greed, for hatred, for anger, for aversion, for delusion. We also have an extraordinary potential for love and compassion, for happiness and for joy as human beings. I mean, the potential that we have for happiness is probably beyond our comprehension even. So it's really up to us what we do. You know, what we do is going to determine whether or not we suffer, whether or not we bring suffering into the world, whether or not we inflict suffering upon others. What we do is going to determine whether or not, you know, we are happy, we experience the happiness of the heart, whether or not we support others in their efforts to be happy. It's all about what we do. So we talk a lot about goodness, our goodness. And the thing about our goodness is, you know, it begins as a potential. We have a potential for goodness. You know, we have the seeds of goodness within us. We have a potential for goodness, but we have to develop our goodness. Our goodness is just not going to manifest itself on its own for the most part. We have to develop our goodness. That's why we're here. That's essentially what the practice is about. It's a way of developing our goodness through the effort that we make in meditation and being heedful, so that we can express our goodness in the world through our actions. So we have this potential for goodness, just like, you know, a plant has a potential for it to grow. But we have to develop it, we have to cultivate it, just like we have to cultivate a plant to make sure it gets enough water and fertilizer and sunshine, etc. So as I said, our practice is a practice of developing our goodness, that this just isn't going to happen. You know, when we kind of know that, when we say, well, we don't know it, but we express our frustration with that conundrum when we say, you know, I'm really trying to be good, but I'm not able to be good. I'm really trying to be happy, and I'm not able to be happy. I'm really trying to be able to do this, and I'm not. Because it ain't just going to happen because you want it to happen. It's going to happen because you put in the work, and you make the effort, and you develop your skill. And through the development of the skill, you take action that's an expression of your goodness. So we develop, you know, so we can really say that our practice is in the service of developing our goodness, developing our potential, creating an essence in this world. So the meditation is, of course, one of, you know, there's a lot of key elements, but oftentimes we break it down to these two primary elements, you know, our meditation and the practice of heedfulness. The Buddha, oftentimes, many times, more times than he did anything else, broke it down to these basic two elements, meditation and heedfulness. As he often said when he ended his Dharma talks, practice jhana, monks, don't be heedless, don't later fall into regret. This is our message to you. His last words, continue to be heedful. So we develop our meditation so that we can develop tranquility. And, you know, tranquility in and of itself is great, but once we can develop tranquility and some equanimity, then we are less and less likely to fall immediately into habitual patterns of behavior. So we live, as I like to say, on the pause button. That's the great benefit of developing our meditation, that and the fact that it enables us to be able to see clearly. You know, as we develop concentration, we're able to see more clearly, and which means that we're able to be more heedful. One of the ways, you know, that manifests itself most expressly, directly, is that, you know, if we develop the meditation, if we develop jhana, very much in the way that we talked about tonight in the guided meditation, And then we're able to keep a center in all postures. That's really the mark the Buddha talks about most often in terms of the mark of the development of concentration, is that you're able to call it up and be centered in all postures when you're doing whatever you're doing as you go throughout the course of the day, that you're grounded, you're centered, and because he teaches mindfulness of breathing, and the practice really is the cornerstone of the practice is the breath. It means that you're able to stay with the breath in the body throughout the course of the day. If you're able to do that, then you're able to watch your actions, the potential for action as it arises. You're able to ask yourself, you know, are the actions that I'm about to take going to lead to happiness or suffering? Are they going to be an expression of goodness? Or are they going to take me in the other direction? You're able to see clearly what you need to do. You're able to connect into the heart as you go throughout the course of the day. You know, it's great to talk about, you know, love and compassion and all these things, but, you know, they're just really ideas unless you can connect into them throughout the course of the day. You know, I talked about this recently when I gave a talk on compassion. You know, it's like, and I talked about, you know, my conundrum for many years. I'd go to hear wonderful talks on about compassion, and they were so wonderful, and then I'd walk outside of the lecture hall, and, you know, I was a son of a bitch. You know, well, why is that? Because I wasn't present. You know, so I just went back into my habitual behavior. You know, in order to be able to see what we need to do that's compassionate, that's loving, that's an expression of our goodness, we need to be grounded, we need to be centered. So the meditation enables us to be centered as we go throughout our lives, and then to practice heedfulness, which is to pay attention to our actions, to see what in actions are in support of our goodness and act accordingly. Of course, there's certain actions that, if we talk about actions, that are kind of basic. Generosity is very basic. Now, of course, generosity is really a training, though. You know, I mean, I write about this in my book. You know, the Buddha doesn't say practice generosity. You know, he tells you how to develop the, you know, the practice of skillful giving, because a lot of times we can give and give in an unskillful way. We can give not so wholeheartedly. But generosity is, you know, a basic action that we learn to begin to take, as is the practice of non-harming. But the practice of developing our goodness through our actions entails a lot more than just the practice of generosity or the practice of non-harming. It entails all of our actions. So, you know, we strive to develop our goodness through the work that we do, you know, through our relationships, you know, these big life experiences, and the actions that we take. But, you know, I think that when we talk about our actions, we tend to think about discrete actions. You know, we tend to think about actions you take in terms of work or career, or actions you take in terms of relationships, or even actions like going to the class or something like that, or meditating, or going to visit a friend who's sick, that kind of a thing, in terms of your goodness, or exercising in the service of taking care of yourself, you know, all these discrete actions. But when we think about our action, you know, it's kind of hard to describe, but our action is more than just the discrete actions that we take. It's kind of how we are in the world from day to day, from moment to moment. You know, as the existentialists say, we throw ourselves into the world. It's like, how are you? How are you when you're in the world? Is the way that you are when you're in the world, you know, are you expressing your goodness? Are you expressing your goodness? That's why I always kind of talk about, like, as you're listening to the Dharma talk, you know, in the refreshment period afterwards, as you walk down 14th Street, as you go throughout the course of your day. We tend to like pick out discrete actions. Oh, I'll do this, I'll practice this generosity, and that'll be an expression of our goodness. But really, when you're practicing the Dharma, when you're living the Dharma, it's the way that you live from moment to moment. You know, the way that we live from moment to moment is an expression of our goodness. You know, that we've cultivated this goodness and it just shines. You know, it just shines from moment to moment in the world. It shines through our actions, through what we say, through what we do. I mean, you know, even as I say, and again, you know, when we think about our goodness, so, kind of like, what is our goodness? You know, this comes up a lot. We talk about this in class. You know, what is our goodness? I mean, it's certainly being good and following precepts, you know, but it's a lot more than that, right? I gave a talk on this fairly recently. You know, transcends just being good, transcends being polite. It certainly transcends sort of like this sugary, you know, lovey, schmaltzy, you know. It certainly transcends a lot of the way that people think or use the concept, the perception, the notion of love. You know, I mean, that's a word that just kind of gets bandied about. You know, it's like people just throw that around. I mean, it's so different than like when I was growing up. You know, it's like if you said you loved you to somebody, you know, that was like, now, you know, one of the things that really frosts me, really bothers me, is like I'm walking down the street and I'm at an intersection and there's somebody on the cell phone and it's like 5th Avenue and 14th Street and the cars, it's really noisy and somebody's on the cell phone. I love you. Goodbye. Yeah, it's not that. It's not that. You know? It's not that. It transcends social action. You know, expressing your goodness transcends the actions that you take with regard to any kind of social action or activism. I mean, a lot of times people do a lot of those things and they're not expressing their goodness. I mean, I can kind of vouch for that, having grown up in the 60s. Like somebody was in the class not too long ago, I think it was on New Year's Eve, you know, and we were having this great discussion, and the person said, well, I really want to do good in the world. How do I do good? And I said, don't worry about what you need to do good in the world. Develop your own goodness. Develop your own goodness. Then you'll be able to do good in the world. So I think a good way to think about what our goodness is when we use that word brightness. You know, when we are expressing our goodness, you know, and this is a question, look, this is a question that you have to ask. This is a really important question. You know, once we begin to get more groundedness, more centeredness, more connected into the heart, you know, then we have to ask, well, where am I going and what am I doing and how can I express my goodness? So you have to ask that question, well, what is my goodness? But one of the ways that I think is useful to kind of think about it, and certainly is the way that I understand it, in large part based on what I've learned from other people's goodness, is this quality of brightness. Is this quality of brightness that as we're in the world, you know, there is a quality of brightness. There is a quality of, you know, it's a very hard thing to describe, right? You know, this quality of brightness. I mean, I always like what Tan Jeff's teacher told him, what Ajahn Lee told Ajahn Phuong, what he said about Ajahn Lee, what Ajahn Phuong said about Ajahn Lee, he said, he showed me the brightness of the world. So I think that, you know, it's something that we talk about, you know, brightening the mind. You know, well, what does it mean to really express brightness? What does it mean to be bright? Well, one thing it means is to be present and in the body, for certain. You know, and our tendency, of course, is to go out of the body and out of being present. That's why in the meditation you have to continually say to yourself, mindful of the breath, mindful of the body. I mean, that's why we're doing that. We're doing that not because we're taskmasters. We're doing that because we, you know, your goodness, you're going to find, your brightness, you're going to find in the body. You know, but it's a really, you know, this is the training. This is the training coming home to the truth of our goodness and the brightness within us, the light within. You got to get within. got to get within the body. So it's a process of continually mindful of the breath, mindful of the body, cultivating a sense of ease in the body so that it becomes a place where you can reside, so that you can become connected into your goodness. You know, and it certainly has a lot to do with being awake, right? Being awake and being very alert. This is why in the meditation we have to continually remind ourselves to be awake and alert. You know, because it's our tendency to kind of go off into some kind of a dull state, a non-awake state. You know, and it's so much of what we do and the way that we live and the way the culture affects us is about numbing us, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you're not awake when you're on that cell phone standing on Fifth Avenue. You know, all of that technology just dulls us and dulls us and dulls the light within and prevents, you know, our light from shining and prevents our brightness from showing itself. So, you know, we're in our bodies and we're awake and we're connected to the heart, you know, and this quality of goodness within us. And this, of course, all comes through the training, you know, and there's this quality of brightness, you know, that just shines and connects with others, you know, relates to others, goes straight through to the heart. You know, I always like, you know, what Thomas Merton and many other people have said, you know, when they talk about, you know, the quality of, you know, awakening, you know, I mean, he called it the eternal dance. You know, it's more than anything, it's like dancing or singing or music. You know, that's what our brightness is. Even if we're not dancers or musicians, it has that quality. Rumi was, of course, you know, the poet who really kind of spoke to this so much. And as he said, today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. So how are you going to kneel and kiss the ground? And of course, one of the ways that we can begin to ascertain that quality of goodness that we have the capacity to develop is by reflecting on childhood or being around children. You know, as children, you know, all of those ways of blocking ourselves off from being present, in other words, the clinging, the holding on to greed and aversion and delusion, weren't developed. So, you know, of course, we were greedy and we got angry, but we didn't cling so much because the mind wasn't so developed and our goodness also shined, you know. So a lot of times when I strive to understand the brightness that is there, that light that's there, that needs to be polished so that it can shine, you know, it helps to reflect on childhood. That's why when we do, excuse me, loving kindness practice, we suggest the reflection on when you were a child. I mean, that was the reflection that the Buddha did, reflect on a child when you were happy so that you begin to understand what that quality of brightness is. As many of you know, I just finished a 2 weeks of self-retreat. And generally when I do self-retreat, I do it in my apartment. And one of my favorite times during the day is usually sometime in the morning before, in between breakfast and the time when I do begin my morning sitting. I sit, take my shower, have my breakfast, and I, you know, sometimes I just like to stand at the window, you know, and where I live, you know, there's kind of a pathway out the front door, and there's a lot of kids that live in my building. And one of the things I always like to do, and I've done this so many times on retreat, because it's like, you know, 7:30 in the morning or whatever, and the kids are going to school. You know, and I just like, wow, I was just watching the kids go to school, you know, like the little kids, you know, and it's like, kids don't walk. They skip. You know, they skip and they twirl and they dance and they, you know, and the parent, of course, you know, maybe starting that process of dampening that, but the kids are skipping. The kids are skipping. That's what the brightness is. It's right there. Just look at the kids skipping down the street, dancing, I mean, not so much when I think, when I do that reflection, you know, from childhood, you know, and thinking about that. I probably learned more about what goodness is and what this quality of brightness is and what this quality of brightness that we have the potential within us to develop is all about when my mother died just a few months ago. And of course, you know, what the teachings suggest is that the body dies, but what doesn't die is our goodness. The goodness that we've cultivated lives on. That's what passes on. That's why the Buddha strove in his life to develop what wouldn't die, as opposed to cultivating all the things that that would die when he was a prince, all those material things. And what he found, what didn't die, was a person's goodness. So that's what we strive to do in this life. And after my mother died, sort of what was right there was her goodness. It was just, again, one of these things that's really hard to explain, but it was so palpable to me and to my brothers and sisters, because she was a person who had an extraordinary goodness that she really expressed and developed in many ways, even though she had many difficulties in her life. You know, and that quality of her goodness was just so, it was like she was gone, you know, and her body was gone, and all the suffering and the strife, and, you know, all the times I was pissed off at her, and she was pissed off at me, and we got pissed off at each other, were gone, and just what was there was her goodness. One of the stories that I told at, she just had this light, you know. I mean, I can't describe it, because it is that which can't be described. You know, and I only diminish it by describing it. You know, I'm pretty good at describing things, right? Most of you know that. It's like, it's really hard to describe that quality of brightness, that light. But, you know, she had that quality of, if you want to call it spirit, you know, this great spirit that just went straight through to the heart and was indelible and was always, it'll always be there. And it's what informed my life and who I am and the way I live more than anything else. I told this story at the funeral that about how when I was in sixth grade, they let us go home for lunch if we wanted to. And I lived kind of far from the school, but my friend Dave Meyer lived around the corner from me, and he used to ride his bike to the school. And sometimes he'd go home for lunch, and he'd ride me on his handlebars to go home for lunch. And, you know, the thing of it is that I went home, you know, not, it was a time when my mother wasn't working because she had babies in the house. So I was sixth grade, I was 11, 12 years old, and I would go home fairly frequently for lunch. And I kind of got to thinking about that, like, why did I go home for lunch? You know? It was like, you would think you're 11, 12 years old, you'd want to be in the cafeteria with your comrades, you know, and you're doing all that stuff and having all that fun. You know, and as I said at the funeral, you know, it's like, I sure as hell didn't go home for my mother's grilled cheese. You know? I went home because I wanted to be with her. I wanted to be, you know, in that light. I wanted to experience and be, and to feel her brightness. It's like I wanted to be with her. I don't know what else, how else I can say it. And I wasn't a mama's boy, you know, at all. But there was such a quality of spirit and brightness about her. You know, one of the things about my mother is that, you know, she was a school teacher too, you know. And, you know, she taught in a school district for many years. It was a very tough school district, lower socioeconomic area, a lot of kids with tough backgrounds. And she loved it, you know. I mean, that was when, you know, I mean, she just shined, you know. She was a master teacher. And, you know, she loved every minute of when she taught. You know, and when she was dying, you know, and towards the end she couldn't really talk, but I would sit by the bedside, and we, you know, and I kind of we talk about, we meditate a little, and then we talk about things that, you know, she might want to think about. And, you know, I remember talking to her about when she was a teacher, and, you know, and I mean, you could just see how she just brightened. I think that a good way to think about or to understand, you know, and again, hard to describe, you know, thinking about ways that we might be able to describe what this quality of brightness is, you know, maybe think about a teacher that you had, you know, when you were in elementary school. You know, maybe you had a teacher, right, that 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you know, you still remember. And, you know, the thing of it, you know, and it's like this, right? It's like there's this teacher who, you know, you still remember and has you know, this quality of presence, and, you know, their light is, you know, still coming straight through into your heart. You know, it's not because of what they taught you, you know. I mean, you don't remember anything of what they taught you. You don't even remember the subjects you learned in that grade. The reason why you remember that teacher, the reason why, you know, that remembrance is so strong is because of their goodness, because that doesn't die. You know, all those, you know, things that you learned about grammar and punctuation and multiplication, you know, that's like, that's gone, but that person's goodness is like straight right there in the heart, you know, those teachers that I had. That's what goodness is. That's what brightness is. One teacher that I had that, you know, to this day, you know, just like I said, you know, their goodness had such an effect on me and continues to have an effect on me was my algebra teacher. Actually, I had her for algebra and geometry, 9th and 10th grade, Miss Williamson, you know, and, you know, she was a really great teacher and she had a lot of good spirit. When I first was in her class, you know, this is in the late 60s, right? So, you know, it was like the first part of the year, freshman year, I had her for algebra. And, you know, I loved her. She was great, but, you know, she was a very, you know, she was your classical math teacher. She was young. She was like in her 20s, I'm sure. But she was a very prim. You know, her hair was like in a really tight bun. You know, she wore, you know, skirts and, you know, the shirt with a button to the top, you know. And then we went away for winter Christmas vacation. You know, we were out of school for like 10 days. And unbeknownst to us, during that period of time, she went to San Francisco. You know, and when she came back, the hair was down, she was wearing bell bottoms, and, you know, for weeks, she was actually the first teacher, she got kicked out of the school for wearing pants. She was the first teacher to wear pants, and finally they rescinded that and said, you know, teachers can wear pants, you know. But over the next week and the rest of that year and the next year, I mean, her teaching was always, you know, brilliant in terms of teaching math, but also informed so much with teaching life lessons, you know, and teaching the kinds of things that we teach here. And her big thing was the little yellow smile buttons. So she was constantly passing out the little yellow smile buttons all the time. See, that's what goodness is. That's what brightness is. It's like, I don't remember how to do a quadratic equation, you know? I'm surprised I even remember that there was such a thing as a quadratic equation. It's like, I remember her. You know, her goodness, let's put it that way, is like as evident in my heart and as clear to me, and her brightness shines within me as brightly as it ever did 50 years ago, 48 years ago, dare I say. So these are just some things, you know, to think about. You know, to think about, you know, these questions to think about, you know, do I understand that my goodness has to be developed? You know, do I understand that this is what the practice is all about, is developing my goodness? And it's not necessarily about, you know, starting a soup kitchen or, you know, doing this or that or the other thing. It's about what you are and who you are and how you live from day to day and moment to moment, how you express yourself in the world, how you throw yourself into your experience of life. So, you know, to ask, you know, what is my goodness? What is my brightness? These are important questions. How can I express my brightness in the world? What is the brightness that's within me, you know, that I need to polish and allow to shine?